and Smart Book Club Podcast. My name is Barney, and this man here, his name is...
Retro.
That's right, we've got a special guest on the podcast. Retro, what's your deal?
I'm not from now.
Where are you from?
I'm from back then.
Back then? Oh, those sunset-filled afternoons, yep. Cricket yep. in the street.
Yep, a sunny boy in your mouth, you know?
A sunny boy in your mouth, yeah. Wow. Retro, it's so awesome to have you on. What's your favourite book? Yeah, what's your favourite book,
The Bee Gees.
Yeah, famously a great book. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, you love that book. Yeah.
You can tell by the way they use their walk. I love the Bee Gees.
Yeah. All right, Retro. Well, that's awesome. So,
I'm gonna go.
see you, Retro.
Hi, I'm Matt Young. I'm here to do the Cool and Smart Book Club podcast.
Oh, great. This is the first podcast that we're doing. Trans desert,
across the desert, across the wide open, the great southern land.
The great open plains.
Across the great Australian bite.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, here's something that's always bothered me, is that bite is spelled B-I-G-H-T in Great Australian Bite. What's that about, Bookman?
Well, it rhymes with night and kite, and both of those things are... So there was a man, Wilbur and Burks, you might have heard of them. They were famous explorers. What they did when they were down on the Great Australian Bight is both of them had wives whose last names, their maiden last names were Bight, you know, common at the time to adopt a husband's last name. And they were flying a kite at night they lost it. It blew off and they said, oh, wow, it really blew off like... How our wives both like to blow their hair. They blow up.
Both their wives love to blow up.
Yeah, so that's why it's called the Great Australian Bite.
That's great. Thank you. Because I love history and I don't know enough about it. So that's really great.
Yeah.
In case it hasn't been clear from what I think was a really, really great description of why, of us being apart, Bunny's in Perth and I'm in Melbourne.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're in lockdown. Clear.
Last week, we were complaining. We were in a different studio and we were about, I would say, 1 to 2 meters apart. And I found that troubling.
Yeah.
And now we've really tried to, I guess, push ourselves by sending you across the country and demanding that we do it from this longer distance.
Yeah, this is, how are you coping? This is like, what, 3,000 kilometers? Is that right? No.
I'm freaking out, but I thought I was a man named Retro.
Oh God, yeah, that's right.
I've gone sideways. Right. I've gone back
to front.
You've
gone completely side. You are back to front. You've been spun around.
It's like Scott Limerick punched me. So this is the Cool and Smart Book Club podcast. Of course it is.
Yep.
And famously, I have to ask you a question, Barney, just to kick things off. I have to ask you this, and the question is this.
Yeah.
What is a book?
Well, Matt, let me tell you. A book is a tome. It is a integration of ideas that are synthesized through the minds of many, the author, the editor, the publisher, the reader, the viewer, the one that can't read but views the words. And in doing so, creates a trans-desert narrative that can go beyond... the harsh plains of the Australian outback and transport one to anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. To Namibia.
Namibia, exactly. To Tanzania. Do you know, actually,
Tanzania.
I found out...
Yeah, to
what were you going to say?
No. I want to know what you found out the other day, Bar.
So I found out the other day that in Madagascar, they famously have one of the harshest prisons in the world. And guess what?
What?
They still got the Black Plague in that prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I know about Madagascar is that they famously have one of the funniest kings in the world because he's a lemur.
Yeah, yeah. What's his name?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah. He is the funniest king in the world.
Funniest king.
That's definitely it.
He loves to move it. And
he's also
the best dancing king. That's crazy.
Yeah. He's had it for years and it just won't knock him out.
He just keeps going. He's got huge buboes.
He's got huge bubo. What is a bubo?
A bubo is what you get when you have the bubonic plague. They're like huge pus-filled sacs on all of your glands.
Really?
Your glands become buboes.
Wow. What? How does that...
I learned that reading The Plague by Albert Camus.
Really?
Wow. This is a podcast about books.
Yeah, books, exactly. This is a podcast about books. So therefore, you've read a book.
I've read a book. I've read a couple of books. I mean, I actually know what a book is as well. So.
Oh, cool. Please, Matt, could you just tell me what a book is?
A book is a gallery for people who invent fonts. So if you're a man who's come up with a cool font and you're like, I need to show the world this font, you can't just be doing that online. You can't do that on a TikTok, can you?
No.
So you got to find someone who wants to write a book.
Exactly.
And it could be about anything. That's the thing about a book. A book can be about a brave new world, or a book could be about sports.
Yeah.
But what it really is a gallery for a font.
It's a showcase of a font.
A font showcase, yeah.
Well, I would like to ask you this question. Why are more horror books not written in the font Chiller?
your audio really broke up over you saying that, and it made it so slow and spooky.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
I don't know. I actually think there were some books, some Anthony Horowitz books back when I was a kid, all the chapter titles were written in Chiller.
Was that the Raven's Gate?
I think it was more of his short stories that he did that were more just like some spooky tales for kids.
Oh, cool. I never read those.
Neither have I. At the school I worked at, they always used to talk about one story in particular every year. It was about a hitchhiker or something. Hitchhikers are spooky, but...
Yeah, they're definitely spooky. The fear of the unknown, the fear of the stranger.
The Stranger, another book by Albert Camus.
Yeah, that is correct. It's correct.
What are you reading at the moment, Barn? You've been on a plane for like 4 hours, so you must have read five books.
Oh, yeah, I've read a few books on that plane. I'm still reading A.C. Grayling's The Frontiers of Knowledge. I'm further into it now. Love it. It's great. It's so good.
It's good. It's great. Yeah. Where are you up to?
And then science. So I'm not very far in. I like what I'm reading.
That's cool. I read a quote today. A great quote today.
Oh, please tell me about the quote quote.
And the quote quote was from Werner Heisenberg, who was the founder of quantum physics. And he said, the first sip from the glass of natural sciences will make you an atheist, but you'll find God at the end of the cup.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is funny and deep. But also I feel like that's a very good reflection of my journey with science. Like, you know, the first, you know, little bits of it you get, you're like, oh, so this is legit. And God's dead. And then as you get further along, you're like, everything's awesome.
Everything's awesome. What's the real God is the mystery. You know?
Exactly.
It was on an Instagram page called I Need God in Every Moment of My Life. And I've started following them because it's so it has to be ironic. It's so funny to me. I sent you a picture from them the other day about the guy who was like, this car's owned by the only man who's full of the Holy Ghost.
That was amazing.
It's got some good stuff.
We got contacted by a Instagram account the other day. thank goodness that we did. I was really happy to hear from The Writer's Warmth.
The Writer's Warmth, is that what it was?
That's what they're called, yeah. And I said, so they messaged and said, hello fam, myself Ashley. That's how they opened the message.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, great. A lot of warmth there. And then they went on to describe how much it would cost us to promote ourselves on their Instagram. Very expensive.
How much was it? I didn't see the prices.
For a single story promotion, it's $17.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Is that expensive? I feel like it's expensive.
I don't know, man. I feel like our organic reach is huge.
Yeah. But so they, and I said myself, Ashley, I'm so pleased. Thank you for all these rates. I really want to get 4 times your weekly package, which is $60.
Wow.
But I just want to know, you're The Writer's Warmth, but You are not followed by one single literary account in Australia. So how does it work? And I also said, what is the writer's warmth? Do writers just have hot bodies? Please explain. And yeah. They just said they were followed by various writers, big accounts. And I said, J.K. Rowling, watch out for her. Stephen King.
Yeah, she's sus.
Yeah. And I said, I checked and I don't recognize anyone. And then they said, I don't know if those people follow us, but we've got 680K audience, so it doesn't matter. and then...
It doesn't matter. Who cares?
It doesn't matter. And they said, we will help you out. And I said, but what if you guys, you don't have any authors. What if you guys actually hate books and you're trying to burn them? And then they sent... a breakdown of their like engagement, and I said, "Why is it so hot as here? In here, must be the writer's warmth." And they didn't.
Damn, I don't know how you managed to scare them off. You were so interested in what they were selling.
Writer's warmth. Yeah, the writer's warmth.
Wow.
What writers aren't?
I reckon it is because they just have hot bodies.
Yeah, they're running at a higher metabolic rate.
I think it's all the friction of their pencils rubbing up against paper.
Yeah.
Fingers blazing across the keyboards.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it is. It's the friction of structure and creativity bashing against each other in their brains.
Yeah, it's a burn of ideas. Just like a little campfire. It's like lighting a fire with a stick.
There you go. Writer's warmth, if you're listening, this is what you can say next time someone asks you a question about what it means.
You know what's crazy? You, the writer's warmth, you charged us $60 for what we're giving you for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you said charge because, of course, we did follow through and get four times the weekly package.
Yeah, we've lost $240.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we lost it all. So it's not good, but we persevere.
We rebuild.
We rebuild.
I've always thought of us as like the Nelson Mandela of podcasting.
Really? Yeah. I've always thought of us as the Mother Teresa of podcasting.
That's true. Boundless compassion.
Boundless compassion. Boundless. I read a great quote last night in the A.C. Grayling quote book.
What was the quote you read? I actually have another great quote for you as well. It's good.
Well, can you say yours? Because I'm just going to find mine again because I think I've lost it.
No, I need to find mine as well. I'll just...
Oh, no. Okay, no, actually, no, I've got it. This is a French witticism that he uses in it, which is, it works in practice, but does it work in theory?
I do like that witticism. Yeah. That's a good witticism.
That's a good witticism as well.
Here's the thing about the French. Famously witty.
Yeah.
I've often said the French are like the Oscar Wilde of nations.
Oh, I've always said they're like the... Jerry Seinfeld of nations.
I always call them the country about nothing. You know?
Yeah. But it's still so you want to go there. You want to go there.
Go there. You want to see what it's like. You could watch it for hours.
You could watch it.
And then when they invented America, I was like, this is like France on crack.
Yeah. Who's they? Who's they invented America? A.C. Grayling.
Yeah, of course. A.C. Grayling did, of course. Frontiers of Knowledge, he did. His quote book, and then he did America.
Yeah.
Arguably my favourite of his works.
Yeah, fantastic. So the other book I'm reading, which was recommended to me by someone I work with, the unnamed bookshop, Kate, who has got just an absolute blinding run of recommending me books that I love.
So she's your Barney Pollock.
She's my Barney Pollock. Yeah, she's killing it. And it's Her Body and Other Parties.
I can't see it because you're using a virtual background at the moment, and I think your book is green, so it's...
Yeah, it's green.
It's disappearing.
Okay,
hold it in front of your face and see what happens. It looks great.
it's really good. It's like short stories. They're very funny, but also very dense. She plays with the form in such exciting ways. One short story is just told as a Law and Order episode.
That's
about like a relationship. And there's some really dark bits in it, and it's kind of undercut with this humor. I really dig it.
That's cool. Yeah.
What are you reading?
Allow me to ask you some questions.
What do you read? You don't get...
Okay, right now I'm reading a book you recommended me, actually, called The Fear of Doing Nothing. I'm reading that, which is Notes of a Young Therapist by Valerie Hazanov, I think it is. That's what I'm reading at the moment, and I'm loving it. Last week I finished reading Frontiers of Knowledge, which I really enjoyed and just absolutely did not understand. Like, I'm going to just have to read it again. So much of it went over my head, and so much of it I was like, this is cool. But like all the stuff in it about neuroscience, there's a great show on Netflix at the moment called Human, and it just, like, I watched that and it clarified so much stuff I read in the neuroscience section. I was like, it's easier with pictures. It's great with pictures.
Yeah, hell yeah. And well, cool, I'm so pleased that, yeah, cool. And I'm so pleased that you said to me, I think you were about halfway through, and you said, I'm about halfway through. It's great, but a lot of it's going over my head. And what that did for me is give me permission to read it and be like, don't get that bit. Oh, well, keep on going.
That's what like, we could do. You have to plow through.
Yeah.
Because, like, what are you going to do? Like, go off and read some neuroscience papers or something and be like, that'll clarify this whole thing.
Yeah. So they'll put it in really understandable phrasing. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, he does have a pretty good habit of, like, tying up a section by putting everything into quite plain speech, which is nice. Like the history one, I think I was going to message you about it. When I got to the end of the history section, I was like, he's really hit his stride here. He really sort of tied everything together and was like, oh, now I care. It was nice.
Right. Yeah. That's good. So what questions were you going to ask?
I was going to ask, are you still reading Upright Beasts? Did you finish Upright Beasts or?
I left it in Melbourne, and here's why. I got up to a point in it, like, I was really enjoying it, and I got up to a point where it changed, and it was a heading in the middle of the book, and it said, "The Beasts We Know," and all the stories were like personalized. I can't remember what the actual word for it is, but it was like personalizing animals and telling stories from their perspective.
Anthropomorphizing.
And I was like,
right.
And I was like, yeah, if I want to watch or read Air Bud, I will, buddy. Like, I don't need... I don't know. I find it, when stories are told from animals' perspectives, I'm always like, this is bullshit, because this is from a human perspective.
Was it like... did it touch on that thing we've talked about before about how, like, a lot of animals get lumped into certain categories and all that kind of stuff? Like, what sort of animals are we talking about?
There was a dog and there was a... Yeah, they were very...
A dog?
Much...
Boring?
Yeah, exactly.
If I wanted to read a book from the perspective of a dog, I'd read Selby Speaks.
Exactly. Yeah, or Clifford the Red Dog. Like,
yeah.
What the hell? I mean, I want to read a book that's told from the perspective of a centipede.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Hey, yeah, I want to read a book about some kind of human centipede.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to read. I want to read a book from the perspective of the human centipede.
That's the only book I want to read. I don't want to read any of this dog shit. And if I want to read a book about a dog, I want it to be a fun, cool dog. Because here's what I love about dogs. They're fun and cool. I want to read about some sad dog having a psychological drama.
Exactly. Yep. And if that's what they are. It's like the animals having these, like, intense psychological internal struggles. And it's like, this is... What the... Come on, man. Like... Come on.
I'm still willing to try it personally, but...
absolutely.
So it just pivots from, like, human just straight to animal, and there's just...
Yeah, yeah.
Dang. Well, good to know. Mm. But now you found a new short story queen. You're onto your... You're in a happy short story zone.
I am. They're really, really... What, the first story, which is phenomenal, has lots of, like, you should read this aloud, and this is how the voices you should use for the characters.
That's funny.
Yeah, and there's lots of, like, if you're reading this to other people at this point, you know, it'll be like, the character has this experience, it felt like this, so clap in the person's face and stuff like that. Like, that's how it...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Can you hear a song at the moment? Is that just me?
No, I can hear it. That sounds like an ice cream truck or something.
I think it's my washing machine or something, and I just started hearing it freaking out.
Well,
I thought I might have been hallucinating.
Oh, cool. Hello. Imagine if this was a song that you could hear. This was your hallucination.
Maybe some kind of flashback. That sounds cool, though. So, okay. And what about Lies of Locomora? Is that dead to you?
Well, I haven't picked it up again, but it's not dead. Like, it's not.
It's...
I could definitely pick it up again. And I have the audiobook on my phone, and apparently it's really good.
I mean, when I originally had it recommended to me, it was by someone who had listened to the audiobook and they were a very massive fan of it. So I imagine it is quite fun. And half the fun of that book is the dialogue. So I imagine listening to people say it would be just whip smart, funny shit.
Yeah,
you know?
A cracking listen.
A real knee slapper, you know? You'd be sitting there on the plane, you'd be elbowing your guest.
On my plane.
On your plane, on your PJ.
Yeah, my personal jet.
Yeah, on your personal jet. That's cool.
Hell yeah. Are you reading anything else?
Yeah, so I finished Frontiers of Knowledge. Then I started reading that Barry Jones book, which we spoke of last week in very mocking tones.
Yeah.
It was called What is to be Done? Political Engagement Saving the Planet. And man, I really loved it. It made me feel very politically active. It got me very riled up about the environment and about Australian government and all that sort of stuff. So it was really, really cool. I'd really strongly recommend it to anyone living in Australia who wants to help climate change and shit but doesn't know how. It was really cool. Just like lots of stats, lots of facts, lots of like one of those really hopeful books where it's like, yeah, everything's fucked, but if we actually all kind of dig our heels in, it's possible to fix stuff. And
that's so awesome.
Yeah, in the sort of vein, not of like everyone should buy a compost bin and have shorter showers, but like everyone should hassle their local government to do something about it because it's not a matter of personal action so much as it is like industrial, which is really cool. Very, very collective action, group power kind of dynamic. There was a fact in there that was like, I don't know if it's a fact, it's a speculation by the dude, but he was like, if, you know, 5% of the people who are eligible to vote in Australia signed up, like joined whatever political party they support, like as a member, you know, you can just like become a member of the Greens or Labour or whatever. If 5% of voters did that, it would fundamentally change the face of Australian politics. Because once you're a member, you get to like vote on policy or vote on who gets to run for things. And at the moment, so few people do that, that it's just like the Labour and Liberals just get to do whatever the fuck they want because it's all in-house. And there is actually no like direct democracy. There's no actual voice of the people in there.
Wow. That's fascinating. Like, I had no idea that that was a thing. And it's interesting that, you know, there's a party in Western Australia, and I can't remember their name, but the whole thing is that they would be putting forward like a pseudo-representative, and every decision that that representative makes is voted on by people, like online, and then whatever the vote is, that's what they go through with.
I love that.
But it's funny that that's, you know, when I heard about that, I was like, wow, that's so interesting and new, but it sounds like you could have been doing that for a long time.
But it's the case he makes is that that's a very deliberate choice by like the two major parties, is that if they like they don't it was really interesting a comparison he made. There's the fact that like in America, basically whoever has the most money behind their campaign, they win, because voting isn't mandatory over there. So if you can manage to rile up the most people to vote, you win, obviously. Whereas in Australia, because voting's compulsory, as much as that's a real boon to our democracy, it also just means people can completely disengage from the process, show up on the day, tick the box that means they won't get fined, and then they don't have to think about it ever again. So, and like the major parties have kept that rolling, and because if they go out and actually get people involved, they will have to change their policies. It really makes you rethink it.
It's like much like the climate change stuff and what people can do together or by themselves. Like there's so much, I think there's probably, and I would include myself in this, like a lot of people that want to be more aware of that kind of stuff and live their life in a way that reduces emissions, but you have some knowledge of about what you can do, but you don't have the whole picture. One of the things that, you know, so what happens instead is that the late great capitalism decides to give solutions to people that by educating them about something that they can then exchange for money, like keep cups, for instance, where this is action by you buying this thing, and there's actually all these other things that you could do without spending any money at all have, you know, like a lot of those, like some keep cups, like there's keep cups by certain brands that come in packaging that can't be recycled. Like, it's the whole thing is just, yeah. You know, ultimately, you know, they do have some merit if you're using them over a certain amount of times, but
yeah,
you could also take a mug that you already own to the coffee shop and say, can you put my coffee in this? And
they will do it. Fill this with coffee? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like, and it also just so much of the burden is put onto individual people when the major problems are like coal or anything like that. It's like, I don't dig up any fucking coal, but I have to turn my lights on in my house or whatever. So like, are you implicitly, you know, using that? But if you use the time that you were going to spend to find the perfect keep cup online, instead you just write like a short, sternly worded letter to fucking, I don't know, your local council member, something else might, like, that, you sort of pass the buck upwards so that they can kind of actually make a difference, ideally.
Yeah.
It's very similar. That thing you were saying about the, I'd love to know what that party's called in Western Australia who does that, because that is, like, that's direct democracy, like, deliberative democracy, and that's, like, I only learned about that last year in that book Humankind by Rutger Bregman. I don't know if I talked to you about that much, but that book was, like, was probably the last book that got me really riled up like this. I probably read it at like the same time last year. I think it's around July every year that I go, I have to save the world. And they had a really big thing about direct democracy. And it must have been a uni break or something at the time, because I got like up on my high horse. I did start emailing all these people in government. I interviewed a bunch of like local politicians and stuff. I was like, why don't you do direct democracy? And a lot of them were like, we try, man. Like, we're like, actually quite a lot of us want to, but it's actually just very hard to get off the ground. The fact is a lot of people, like most people don't want to get involved. I'm like, oh, yeah. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to start in your own circle.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I remember a couple of years ago, and it would have been your month for saving the world, July.
Oh no.
You're like, Australia should be a goddamn republic.
I stand by that. But I bet you're right, actually. I reckon I could check my emails and find it. Because, yeah, that was like one really serious month. I went to party meetings and stuff. I went to the Australian Republic. What are they called? The ARM. The Australian Republic Movement. I went to like their big AGM at a pub in the city. I rubbed elbows with all these little like young Labour members in suits and shit. It was crazy.
Wow. That's the other.
I loved it.
Yeah, it sounds. I mean, get me involved. I want to see all these young Labour members in suits. There's this other weird barrier to, you know, being a member of a party, whichever way you're aligned. That the young Liberals or young Labour. Or, I mean, I don't know about the young Greens, but definitely young Liberal and young Labour, especially at uni, they're often like the most painful people you've ever met. And
insufferable.
Yeah. So it's like, and they're not, it's like a lot of the time you're like, this is just me when I've met people associated with that. It's like, this isn't about you trying to make change or do stuff. This is about you training to become a politician. Like,
that's I mean, that's another one of the really cool things in this book that he talks about a lot. It's just about like the life cycle of a politician nowadays and how it goes from, you go from like being a volunteer to a staffer, to a member, to an MP. Then you take a couple of years off to be with your family and then you become a lobbyist, basically.
Mm.
And like that's the career path that nowadays young politicians want to get to. And Barry Jones is like a professor at UniMelb. So apparently he gets like a lot of people coming in being like, hey, Barry, like, I'm really interested in getting into politics. Like, where would you recommend starting? And he's like, oh, which party? And they're like, oh, not really sure. Which one do you recommend? Like, so you must have, like, an issue you really care about. And they're like, oh, should I? Should I have an issue? Good idea. I'll think of an issue.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one wants to get involved because they have any passion or anything. It's because they're like, oh, this is just a career path that I think would be cool. And, yeah, the argument is just so much nowadays that, like, career politicians now are just, like, they only want their own career advancement or to win the next election and have no actual interest in public policy and that kind of stuff, which is a cool thing to think about.
Yeah.
And that like most of those sort of politicians are people who have gone through uni politics and stuff, and they've always just stuck on the same track. And he talks about how during his time in parliament, you know, a lot of the other party members hadn't even been to university or anything like that. They were just people who were passionate about an issue, or they were quite well read, and they like were good at arguing and that sort of shit. So they were just like, they got involved and they had other life experience outside of actual politics. So they weren't in the bubble, which was, I don't know. It sounds like a much better system.
Mm. Do you think with uni, like, it's interesting that, you know, during his time that lots of people hadn't gone, but I would assume during his time that there would have been maybe some period where university was free. And part of university now, they're businesses now, basically. But
yeah.
You know, there's an argument to say that by becoming businesses, they become more accessible because their main motivation is no longer education but money.
Yeah.
They want more and more people to come to university, so they've made them more accessible.
Yeah.
But in a time where they were free and it was government money, it was harder to get a university education because there weren't these like pathways that, you know, that for people that don't do well in exams but they are, you know, perfectly capable, blah blah blah. So it's this weird, like, I mean I obviously I'm on the side where I think it should be free,
but also
you know, it's more complex than just people, unis just becoming these like slush funds or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but there's also I think we've talked about before how much, and it's a thing that he brings up a lot in the book, but we talked about this weeks ago about how nowadays people are just so much more encouraged towards specialization. And when you specialize on something, you end up with quite a narrow view and you sort of make everything conform to the facts that you understand. Whereas like for hundreds of years before that, education, the role was kind of to, you learn how to learn and then you leave university with this new like appreciation and understanding for learning and how to kind of formulate facts and all that sort of stuff. And then you go out and find your specialization. Whereas nowadays the impetus is more on to decide on a specialization early and then stick with it forever. And that loss of like generalization creates such a more like limited framework, I guess, for making decisions and that kind of stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
What's, I mean, I, where I study, they, like there's a, you know, like
the unnamed university,
Melbourne University. They have these like terrible. They do a lot of bad shit. But one of the things that's really good is they have this model where you do in your undergrad, you do arts or science, and then you pick like your major, and then you just kind of go. You know, you do breadth subjects, and you do all these it's broader.
Then
like when I first went to uni in Perth. It was like, what, like you said, you like pick something and then you just do that and that's it.
And
that sucks.
I wonder if, because like when I first left high school, I got an offer to come study law at Melbourne Uni, but my understanding was I had to complete basically an arts undergrad first, like you say, and then I would basically start law for 2 years or 2 or 3 years or something after I'd finished that undergrad. And I ended up not doing that and going to UTAS. And at UTAS, I had to start doing that. Like I was doing arts and laws at the same time. And I found it insufferable. I hated the law component. But I often wonder how much different my life would have been if I'd gone to Uni Melb, done 3 years of just sweet little arts, just done whatever arts shit I wanted, and then I could have decided at the end whether or not to continue on with the law stuff. It would have been a real sliding doors moment.
Yeah. Well, there's this other...
What could have been?
What could have been? Oh,
I could be the head of the Australian Republic Movement by now.
You could by now. You could be head. You could be in the suit at the pub in the city.
I could be the president of Australia.
You could be the president. Damn.
But instead, I've got a podcast about books.
Yeah. So look who actually ended up on the good.
Suck on that, Barry Jones.
Barry Jones, where are you again, Barry Jones?
No, I'm happy.
Yeah, that was unconvincing, but you know that's good. One of my agenda items here. Oh, you're really grinning.
Oh yeah.
One of my agenda items after our classic agenda items is in the theme of a lockdown. What is your favorite book with a lock in it?
And this is a great question. It's one I think about quite a lot. So
yeah.
My favourite book with a lock in it is The History of Philosophy by A.C. Grayling, because it talks about the philosopher John Locke.
Nice.
That's my answer. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a
no
twist.
Worries. Yeah.
Or it's the book Lost and Philosophy, which is about applying philosophical frameworks to the television show Lost And I like that one because it's got a character named John Locke in it.
Wow. Wow. How? I'm lost. Like, I watched it at the time. Loved it. Loved it so much. I never saw the end because I got sick of bullshit. Yeah. Oh, what were you going to say?
Yeah. I'm just saying the connection is so bad. There's so many funny pauses.
Funny, like, pauses.
It's like, it's so uncomfortable to make like a long-winded joke and then just 5 seconds of dead air. There's no telling, like, if you're, yeah, just like waiting or...
Yeah, I just hated it.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I can't believe that J.J. Abrams, after Lost, they then decided, the Disney Corporation, one of the biggest media corporations in the world, were like, we've got a lot of strings to tie up here. You know who the man for the job is in Star Wars? J.J. Abrams. Like,
J.J. Abrams. Yeah. Iconic string tire upper.
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought of it like that. You're right. He has a track record for being incapable of offering a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, what? And it really, for me, I found it really depressing because I was like, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other directors out there that have a back catalog of creating things that end well. But through, you know, like, I don't know, negotiation or power or mates or whatever, J.J. Abrams gets this gig.
Yeah. I would just love to see just some, like, random nerd's Star Wars fantasy, the way they wrap it up. Because, like, just a random nerd is going to just pump in a lot of fan service, you know? Yeah. And, like it or not, I think that's what we all wanted. Just the most satisfying conclusion. What's your Star Wars ending? How would you have liked to have seen it happen?
How would I have liked Star Wars
and
to
for
end?
The listeners at home, just imagine it's a book.
Yeah. Well, it's a screenplay, so I guess that's a book.
Yeah.
My definition of a book, just going back to the first thing you said, is a screenplay. So I would have wanted, from the teaser trailer, I was like, oh, I want Rey to go evil and I want Kylo to come good.
Yeah.
Or I want Rey to never even flirt with the idea of, like, what I really wanted basically was in the second, you know, film, Rian Johnson set up this amazing thing that isn't in Star Wars, where it's like, this is just a random person, right? Like Luke was kind of in the first one before
you
know, got all tied up, that has just ended up in this situation, which I was like, that is fantastic. After we have all this, like, everyone's connected, there's like this legacy family, blah, blah, blah. Like, we've done that. We don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's so common across, you know, that genre. I was so happy. The fact that then it was just like completely, like, retroactively changed. It was like, and changed in such a bad way. Like, you know, Kylo Ren being like, I lied.
You know what the sequel trilogy is, Barney? It is a monumental blockbuster example of blocking, like in improv. Like, Rian Johnson made a big offer, you know? Yeah. He made a huge offer. He threw out there, she's nobody, it's nothing. I'm a force ghost, all this stuff. It was great. And then they were just like, they would, try, like, it never worked. All that backpedaling is uncomfortable to watch. We'd rather just see you be like, that idea is fucking crazy. Let's run with it and see what happens. Bunch of cowards.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it. J.J. Abrams is a bad improviser.
Yeah, he's a bad improviser. And I'm going to say he's a coward as well.
Yeah, this is, the record's out. That's the title for this episode. J.J. Abrams is a coward.
A coward. He definitely is a coward.
Yeah, every episode title from now on is just going to be us insulting some public figure.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Controversy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love controversy.
They're going to hear about it.
They're going to find out all about it. What's your favorite book with a lock in it?
My favorite book with a lock. Can I just say, I love the, you know, like, there's such a focus on, like, fame is so important in our culture, the dark side of fame is that two people in their 20s somewhere in the world are slamming you on a podcast and you never know about it.
No, even know. It's like actually in Star Wars where I think it's Tatooine gets blown up and Obi-Wan's like, oh, I felt a great disturbance in the Force, like 1,000 souls all screamed out and died at once. That's what they're, that's what famous people are feeling all the time. And they're just hearing, they're just feeling the niggling insults of mid-20s podcasters.
Podcasters. Also, it's Alderaan that blew up.
Alderaan, oh my God. Yeah. Dude, yeah, see. See, because that's the thing, man. I love Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars guy. I don't think I'm quite as into it as you. Because for me, the ultimate ending to Star Wars would be if Rick and Morty showed up.
Oh, see, just to say, my ultimate ending was if Deadpool rocked up.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's what I was missing. Yeah. The Merc with a Mouth.
Exactly. You know, there was, God, there was a bit of stuff about now that, because Disney owns everything. I read some stuff a few months ago where it's like, are Star Wars and Marvel in the same universe? And I was like, if that happens, like, I don't know what. I would be so angry and upset.
What if the Guardians of the Galaxy come along? A long time ago in a Guardians of the Galaxy far, far away. Hey, what do you think Yoda would be like hanging out with Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah, that would be pretty great. What about Yoda and Groot?
Oh, stop it. Two little green guys. That's funny. I am Groot. More like Groot I am.
Yeah, nice. That's what Yoda would say. Oh God. But like, I mean, Rick and imagine Rick and
be sick, oh, man. Wow, that would be, and then sick. If one of them starts smoking a blunt.
Whoa, that would what? Be everyone would be like, what is this?
What is this?
Yeah, that's so cool.
Deadpool would have something to say about it.
He would, he'd be there. What do you think it is about, like, obviously the Avengers is so popular, but what is the, why does every, especially in those kind of films, why does everything have to tie up and why do people need to team up all the time? Like, what's the deal with that? What's
I think
deal?
It's pure. I think it's pure economics, man. I do really like Marvel stuff, and I've actually. Yeah. I don't think we've actually gotten around to talking about this, but I got a book last year for Christmas called like the 100 comics that built the universe. It was like 100 Marvel comics that have basically put together the MCU, and I was like, oh, I really want to read all of these. And just recently, my friend, our friend Simon Hawkins, put me onto Marvel Unlimited, which is an app where you can just, it's just the entire Marvel back catalog. So I've been reading through those 100 things, and in one of like they realized. It was like 20 years into Marvel existing that they figured out, oh, man, actually, no, it was really, really short. There was only like a couple of months into Marvel superheroes existing that they realized that people just go fucking nuts when you put two heroes in a comic together. Like the first two heroes were like the Human Torch and the Submariner, who are now two of the like lowest C-string heroes you could think of.
Yeah.
And they were like the big pulls for a little while. And then they put them both in a comic together and people were like, no way. Like a water guy and a fire guy. Like they lost it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that just continues on nowadays. They're like, hey, how many people can we slam into the world? And people are going to love it.
It's,
you hate it clearly.
Yeah. I hate it. I've really come around to Marvel. Like I hated it. And I've come around by just like accepting them for what they are. But it really annoys me when, you know, like I love Black Panther, but when the Oscars that year, when people were campaigning for Black Panther to get nominated for Best Picture, I was like, what? Like, and also the argument was like, oh, these goddamn snobby Academy members don't want to vote for a cool movie that's up and coming. It's like, no, it was made by fucking Disney. Like
Disney,
this
yeah.
Is, yeah.
Man, I don't... but I think you'd change your tune, dude, if like a good mashup movie came out that had two of your favorite people in it, like, let's say, Rey from Star Wars and like Sigmund Freud. I think that would be more...
Yeah.
I think that would capture your interest.
I just have a bit of cringe in the like the way that it's kind of like... So you won't believe this. We've put two people. It's like this is a kind of like weird buddy cop movie. Actually, I would watch a buddy cop movie with Ray from Star Wars and Sigmund Freud.
And Sigmund Freud, yeah.
That would be.
Don't steal our ideas.
Yeah, I think she'd kill him. Like he would. She'd kill him.
Yeah, she'd kill him. She's a freaking Palpatine dude.
Yeah, she's crazy.
She's crazy.
She's crazy and psycho. but
she's
cool.
Twisted, kind of like Deadpool.
It's kind of, yeah.
And the whole time, Freud would be like, "Uh-oh, daddy issues," because her dad's Palpatine, I think.
Exactly. Oh no, her granddad is Palpatine.
Yeah. See, we don't even know who her like her dad is. Just a rando.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ugh. Yeah. What a shitty ending.
It's so bad. It's so incredibly bad. I had a point about Marvel films or something, or combining things, and
dude, just riff it.
Just riff it. Yeah, it's gonna come back. It's gonna come back eventually.
Marvel films. We'll yeah, I think they've got some good stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Okay, actually, you know what? When they put Crash Bandicoot and Spyro in the same game.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Fucking stoked.
Yeah, that's great news, you know? Or a game like Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Put them all in the same room and let them juke it out. That's fun.
Yeah.
But
I guess maybe it's the maybe it's the fact that every time there needs to be like, "Huh. So who are you again? Me, I'm Deadpool. Who are you?
Yeah.
Human Torch." We hate each other for the first 10 minutes and then we're going to have to join. It's like every time. Like,
and they always have like a fight to figure out how much they like each other. Like they beat each other up so much. And they're like, "Oh, you punched me so hard. I respect you." Like, what sort of message is that?
Yeah. It's horrible. It's fucked. That's the other thing. There's just, in those films, there's so much violence that's never, there's, you know, like Hell or High Water. I think they fire 3 bullets in it. And when they do, it's the most shocking. You're like, "Oh my God, he fired his gun. What the hell?" Whether in that they like blow up, you know, fucking whole cities. And then it's just like, or you just see the heroes like kill people and nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah. I love that. I love there's so much stuff. Like there's so many, you know, in the Spider-Man game, and like Spider-Man never kills anyone, but then you like this, things you can do, just throwing trucks at people like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Dude, you murdered that man." Or Batman, like he's killed dozens of people. And if they're not dead, he's left them in just like horrible, debilitating physical condition. It's like there's no morality there. It's crazy.
No. I remember my point now. I remember my point.
You're not allowed to say it.
Oh, no, please. It's good. It's good.
No.
It's based off a meme, though.
It's like in Hell or High Water. We only want to fire, like, three bullets.
Three bullets.
Make them worth it. No, go on.
You're going to like... Okay. So you would have seen people have, like, photoshopped the Always Sunny in Philadelphia cast into the...
Fantastic Four. Yeah.
And... Oh, that's the timer!
Bye!
And, like, in all seriousness, if they pivot... Because, like, it hasn't worked when they've done it before. But what if they pivoted and actually made that film?
Oh, man. I'd love it. I think it'd be great. I think the more comedy, the better. And those guys are hilarious.
They're hilarious.
Is it, like... Is it Danny DeVito is the thing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That makes sense. That checks out.
I just think it'd be such an... You know, like, with Deadpool, it has this, like... What'd you say? The merc with a mouth, you know, like everything that he does is like done with a bit of a wink. And it's like, this guy's pretty subversive, but it's like, what if you cast people from that show and then just had them play those characters and didn't make, just made the, like if they wrote it, like it's like completely different from a superhero film. Like that would be very interesting.
Yeah. Just take a punt on it, you know? See what they can do.
Yeah.
Because here's what I love about Deadpool. He says what we're all thinking.
Yeah, he does.
That's what makes him so cool.
Yeah. He should run. He should become a member of the Greens.
That's it. If he was in my local party, let me tell you, I'd be politically active. And here's the thing. I reckon Deadpool would love a republic.
Yeah, he would be a Republican for sure. Australian Republican.
Australian Republican, you have to make that distinction nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nowadays,
yeah.
In this crazy world.
In this crazy climate.
Because here's the thing, I'm left wing, baby. What do I want?
You're all left. I was going to say you're in lockdown at the moment, and I was just wondering, what were you going to do this afternoon?
I think I'm actually going to go watch Black Widow, which will be good because you can get it on Disney Plus. Just to completely undercut all the discussion about Marvel.
Yeah.
But other than that,
we can talk about it next week.
We can. I'm going to watch this new book, Black Widow. It's going to be great. And
sick.
I'm gonna probably play some Nintendo Switch, which will be cool. And we didn't get to talk about it, but I found a huge pile of books on the street the other day, so I'll probably try and read some of them.
Oh, hell yeah.
One thing that would have tied well into our discussion about Marvel and Disney owning everything is I found a copy of Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, which I've read before, but it's an interesting book. I'd like to read it again.
I love it.
I think it's the, you know, the novel that predicted the future that most came true, you know? A world that's dominated by pleasure.
Yeah, well, guess what, Barry Jones? Maybe you're not so good at predicting shit because Aldous Huxley did it.
Well, guess what? He actually references Brave New World quite a lot of times in the book.
God damn.
Always one step ahead of you, Barm.
He always is.
That's the thing about Big Baz.
Big Bazaar. That's it for this week.
That's the podcast, baby. The best episode hopefully we've ever recorded.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the top of the pops. Okay, hopefully we can get these pauses out, but if not, enjoy them.
Enjoy them. Soak them up. They're the little moments where you can just tick over in your brain. You can think, I wonder if Barney's going to laugh at that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's awkward.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. What a ride. We've got a show coming up in a month, hopefully.
I don't even know the date.
Is it the 8th, I think?
Sure, August the 8th.
Yep. Keep your eyes and ears open because you never know what's going to happen in this crazy world.
That's the thing. And we like to keep you on your toes. We might pivot and we might become just, we might go into oil rigging.
Yeah, exactly. Next week, this might take place on an oil rig.
I love oil rigs. Just kidding. Yeah. No, just kidding.
Just joking. Pardon?
Just kidding. I think oil rigs should be banned and we should be a republic.
Yeah, well, this guy's... You're politically active, man.
I'm actually quite engaged.
I don't know. I just go down to the ballot and I just put an X in and I get my democracy sausage and I don't give a shit.
Do you like to donkey vote, Barney?
Yeah, I draw a big dick on it or a donkey or... Draw Deadpool, Rick and Morty, whatever you want. I'll put that on a ballot. Vote for this.
I draw a portal on one side of the paper and another portal on the other side of the paper, and I draw rude fingers coming out of both of them.
Ah, I got him.
That's what Rick would do.
Yeah, that's what he would do. Ah, got him. Got him.
Got him. Gotcha. Gotcha, Australia.
Gotcha, government. Oh, no, right. The Liberals have won, and now my welfare payment have been... My student payments have been cut. Oh, no.
Oh, immigrants, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
Follow us on Instagram, @CuelanSmert. Follow us on Twitter, @CuelanSmert. Go to improvconspiracy.com and find our show and buy tickets to it.
So have a beautiful night, day, whenever you're listening to this. God bless you. God bless Barry Jones.
God bless Barry Jones. And yeah, goddammit, get the jab.
Get the jab. Go get your vaccine.
Goodbye.
Bye.